Recording. Okay, so welcome everyone to trauma-informed coaching. I think this is going to be a fun, interesting, hopefully informative and illuminating hour or so together. Sorry, just make sure my screen isn't reflecting too much light here. Okay, so what do I want to say? I want to just start by, maybe I'll stop the share there, just by saying that we're going to talk about using trauma-informed coaching and the concepts that we're going to touch on tonight. We're going to come back around to this again and again and again, right? So the idea here is that you're getting introduced to some of the concepts and the trauma-informed coaching model that we use. Please don't feel like this is the beginning and end of a discussion about trauma-informed coaching. You're not expected to know what to do. You're not expected to be able to work with people who have trauma in their biography. None of that. I really just want to like lift any pressure off anyone, any sense of nervousness or maybe a little bit of self-doubt might be showing up around this topic. But this is really like an introduction to how we're going to approach this, and we'll come back around to this work again and again and again through the curriculum and beyond. Okay. I guess before we kind of really start, let me just share with you what we're going to talk about tonight, so you'll kind of see what this looks like. So we're going to talk about some of the principles of trauma-informed coaching and really dive into Rupert's model, the three different selves of trauma. And in particular, we're going to focus on the survivor self, because that's the part that we'll see most in coaching. And we're also going to talk about entanglement, which is really key for us as coaches. And that's when our survivor self gets tangled up with our client's survivor self. It happens all the time. And sort of how to resource yourself when and if that happens with your healthy self. And just a note for anyone who may have to leave early, next week is an integration week. So that means that there is no new material. It's a chance to just literally integrate, rest, maybe take a break, whatever you need to do to kind of manage your capacity. What we will be doing next week is introducing you to your practice pod mates. And that's based on kind of time zone, location, good fit, all of that kind of thing. So you'll get that information next week. And the idea is that as we move into the practice module, starting from module four, you'll have some people, fellow classmates, to practice with. And the idea is there that you can have more in-depth discussions, more stuff to can be unearthed. It's probably going to bring up more questions. All of that is all good stuff. And we'll also be starting our study group on the week that we start module four as well. So good stuff happening. But hopefully this is feeling like it's kind of paced in a way that allows you to sort of take in what you need to take in, and you're feeling kind of increasingly resourced as we move through. Okay, so let's talk about some principles of trauma-informed coaching. And I guess the first place I really want to start, like when it comes to working with clients who may have trauma in their biography, how equipped do you feel as a coach to support them? Like just right now, can you maybe just drop a number from 1 to 10? 10 being, I've got this, it's not an issue, I don't even think about it, I'm trauma informed, I've been trained, it's good. Or 1 is, I don't really even know what this means, and I'm a little bit nervous about all of it. Just drop a number in there, just to give us an idea of where everyone's at right now, which is great. Cool. Yeah, I mean, I have to let you know, like when I first got introduced to even these ideas. I was probably a strong 1.5 to a 2, right? Didn't even occur to me that I would be working with clients who had trauma in their biography, because surely they would just go to therapy, right? And I discovered very early on that in order to address the real root causes of self-doubt, I'd need to be comfortable talking to folks about their experiences. Sometimes their experiences of just hurt and disappointment and difficulty, and sometimes trauma would come up as well. Traumatizing experiences, traumatic events, difficult relationships that led to kind of trauma responses, all of this, right, was part of the deal. It felt very edgy and uncomfortable to me. I just wanted to talk about the fun stuff of coaching. I had a very conscious desire to work with kind of pretty emotionally high-functioning adults. I didn't really want to work in a therapeutic way with coaching clients. And supervision was really instrumental in helping me to make sense of what was happening for my clients and how to respond in a way that felt safe to me and that allowed my clients to be able to kind of talk about what they needed to talk about to make progress in the coaching session in a way that was safe for them. So contained within the coaching container, which means we don't actually work with trauma, but we may work with people who have trauma. Get that distinction? So it's not appropriate as coaches for us to work with trauma or try and therapize our clients, but we can work with clients who have trauma in their biographies. Yeah. So I was really lucky to work with Julia Vaughan Smith, who wrote the book Coaching and Trauma. She was my supervisor for quite a long time, and she shared Rupert's model with me, which was so, so helpful because it really helped me to conceptualize what might be going on for my client and how to work with them, okay? So I would offer that trauma is both a very under-researched area when it comes to coaching. Like there isn't a lot of evidence-based resources for us as coaches. But I do believe that this is a conversation we should be having. Julia Vaughan Smith's book is brilliant. So it gives a really sort of solid foundation for this work. And I really do believe that being trauma-informed as coaches really does allow us to work in a deeper way with our clients. It means that, multiple studies show that around about 70% of our adults have had traumatic experiences, at least one instance of trauma or a relationship that had trauma in it. So we're already working with individuals who have experienced trauma. But it just means that when we do this consciously, we're doing it in a way that is both safe for our clients and in a way that allows us to work really, in a really kind of deeper and richer way with our clients. Yeah, we can create a container that's really safe for people. And I've worked with coaches over the years who will say things like, "Well, I'm a marketing coach, so we don't even talk about this kind of thing, right? Wouldn't even occur to me that this is a thing I need to give a shit about, right?" And what I would say is that, what about the clients for whom visibility is a really key block? Right, where their self-doubt is all about a fear of visibility, is all about a fear of being abandoned by their clients, and that has its roots in their own experiences of trauma. Wouldn't it be amazing to be able to support those clients to make sense of that, so that it's not that they're white-knuckling through marketing their businesses every time they, they need to be visible? Actually, they're able to do it from a place that's really compassionate and quite gentle. Yeah. So I just wanted to give that example, right? That because we have this conversation a lot when we talk about this, when we talk about things in this module. So I just really want to reassure anyone who is feeling a little trepidatious about this topic that there really is a huge difference between being trauma-informed and working with trauma. So we're not here to do that. That is outside the boundaries of coaching. That requires specialist training and ongoing supervision and all kinds of things that we just don't do as coaches. But I would say that we can absolutely work with our clients and help them to feel really resourced within the coaching dynamic in a way that's safe. So we're going to talk about some of the concepts that will support us to do that today. And then we'll keep coming back to this and we'll just play with it. Okay. I just want to share some principles that will help us to sort of start this conversation going. So the root causes of self-doubt often touch on difficult, hurtful, or traumatic experiences, right? Like, I think we can all kind of get behind that. It all feels pretty useful and true. That means that we're already working with clients who have trauma in their biography. Now, the interesting part of this is that they may not identify their own experiences as trauma. I've worked with a number of people over the years who will share information about their lives, about their experiences, about things that they've been through, and it's textbook trauma. Never occur to them to call it that, right? And I think that's just something to bear in mind, right, that our clients may or may not understand what trauma is, and they may or may not understand their own responses to it. Right. Equally, they may never reveal their traumas to us. Right. So that just may never come up as part of the coaching relationship, either because the client chooses not to reveal that, or because they may have a ton of trauma in their biography, but actually they've spent a lot of time, you know, working through that and making peace with it. And they've, worked with practitioners who've given them some resources to deal with it, right? So I guess the important thing to know here is that even when you have someone with a lot of trauma, that doesn't mean that it's going to become part of the coaching relationship. We can't assume what anyone is going to be thinking and feeling about their experiences, right? So it's just useful to recognize that our own assumptions, our own level of comfort, and our own kind of ability to just recognize what might be going on for our client and kind of gently check in with them, that's really going to support us as we move through this. When we feel at ease with our client's trauma, we're better equipped to help them feel resourced. Right, so you can imagine, right, that maybe you've had an experiences in the past and you've shared those things with a friend. And when the friend says, oh my God, I can't believe that happened to you, that's terrible, right? Like, then you're taking care of them, right? We don't want to give that job to our clients, of course. I'm not suggesting for a moment that that's how we would respond, but just to kind of give a sense of what I mean by that, right? Like, when you are really at ease with whatever your clients bring to coaching, it means that you're able to respond to what they share in a way that helps both of you feel safe. Yeah. So us getting comfortable with this, us getting intentional about what we do and don't do as coaches when it comes to trauma is really for our clients' benefit in the end. And that means that being trauma-informed helps us to create a container of trust and safety for our clients, right? And that is really where the magic happens, right? When it's safe for our clients to share what's going on for them, when they feel safe to be vulnerable, when they feel safe to be themselves, to be known by us as practitioners, that's where our work becomes, one of the catalysts for their transformation. Yeah. So I just want to pause there and just check in with folks. How's that landing for you all? Any questions, anything that's coming up for people? Anyone have anything they want to just share? Please raise your hand. All good? All feeling okay about that? Nothing too concerning. Yeah. Sarah,
hello.
Yourself there.
Yeah. It's not so much a question. It's just I'm loving this module so much because it's really linking together a lot of what I've done with yoga practice.
Yes.
And trauma-informed bodywork practices and I work with people who experience burnout. So I'm getting all this lovely kind of like, all this all fits together really nicely. I suppose just also recognition of our nervous system.
Yes.
And how that interplays with trauma.
Yeah.
And also how hard it is to move through the developmental stages when you've experienced trauma. It's just, this has been such a like light bulb module for me. Loving it. Yeah.
I'm so glad. And you're absolutely right. Like nervous system regulation is really what I mean by creating some safety. So one of the, I'm not a somatic coach and I don't really work in that way, but where I can see that there is some really lovely crossover, particularly with your work, Sarah, is, and you'll probably know way more about this from your yoga training than I do. But what might be helpful for the group is just to really recognize that when I talk about creating a container of safety and trust for the client, what we're really doing there is creating a space where the client can, what's called co-regulate, right? So, and that's like a little dance between our two nervous systems, right? So right now we're all in a space, we're all in a dynamic that's happening, and each of us is going to be having our own nervous system experience in this call. Right. So even if you just check in with your body right now, you might notice different sensations or discomforty feelings or maybe some calm feelings or all kinds of sensations will be playing out for you right now. And what I found is that when I show up to these sessions in a place that's pretty calm and open and I'm like, just let's see what happens. I'm not trying to control anything. I'm trying to share stuff and let it unfold, that creates a space where you can kind of go, oh, it's safe for me to share here. I can ask stuff. I can show up as I am. I don't need to be the expert. I don't need to know everything. I can, you know, I can say, oh, I don't get this. Like all of that is because there is a sense of co-regulation. And when we have trauma in our biography, we can be quite sensitive to things that kind of throw our nervous system into what's called dysregulation, right? And so that's when we have all kinds of different physical and bodily sensations that just impact our ability to be really present. And they're all just very understandable, quite sophisticated protection mechanisms. They're just showing up physically. Does that sound about right to you, Sarah?
It's perfect. Yeah, exactly. And just how powerful it is just by us being regulated, just that resonance in itself has a massive impact, doesn't it, to somebody? Because a lot of people I work with are really stressed out. So no matter what we've exchanged in terms of words, I think just that, I suppose, the exchange of a calmer emotional energy is powerful in itself, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, I think that's the thing that you start to really recognize is words don't mean a whole lot if it doesn't match your energy.
Mm.
And I'm sure that all of us, but just because of the work we do, we're a bit more tuned into that than the average bear, right?
Yeah.
You might find you can kind of sense the energy of a room or you kind of notice when people are, something's off about them, right? Mm. So that's you, that's your kind of tuning for going, oh, something isn't right here. It's an amazing gift to have. I think it's hugely tied to empathy and all kinds of things. So yeah, great. Thanks, Sarah. And we'll talk a little bit more about how these things are going to show up. I think this is going to be hugely relevant for those of you who do work with folks who are a bit stressed out about anything that's going on for them. Alrighty, so let's talk a little bit about Rupert's three selves of trauma model. It's nice and easy, right? It's like super simple. I think it's a bit deceptively simple. But what I found is that this model is really helpful for us as practitioners just to be able to kind of conceptualize what might be going on for our clients. But also for some clients, you may choose to share this model with them. I wouldn't call this a coaching tool, but sometimes, you know, it can be really helpful if it feels appropriate to share this with clients. And because of the way that Franz Rupert has developed this, I think it can be really, really empowering for folks who may just be kind of at a bit of a loss as to what's going on for them. So this is just a metaphor for our psyche, right? That's what we're actually looking at here. And this is what happens as a result of trauma, right? And there is a lot of detail in the workbook about what trauma is and what it isn't. And I'll leave you to kind of read that and ask any questions in the discussion forum that aren't clear to you at any stage during the program. Just come back to this if it feels unclear. What I want you to notice is that the healthy self is very much the largest part of this model. That's the largest part, right? That's the part that's brought the client to coaching. And it's also the part that has kind of access to lots and lots of really healthy resources for the client, right? To imagination and creativity, joy, pleasure. It's the part that can remember things, that can think clearly and show discernment, can take care of the client, you know, access emotions and needs, practices self-compassion, right? That's going to be the biggest part. And the reason I say that is because you've got a client in coaching, right? You don't have, if that part was less than, it would probably, or if it was the smallest part, the client would probably be in therapy. And if after a period of time you think, actually, I think that this client would be best served by therapy, sure, you can refer them on. But what I don't want to spend too much time thinking about that. I want you to start to look at a typical average adult who has come to coaching and who has some trauma in their biography, because that is the majority of people that are coming to coaching, right? The trauma self is the part that holds the trauma. And that is the memories of the trauma, the sensations of the trauma itself, the kind of memories and the sensations that they experienced. But it also has the job of kind of protecting the client from being re-traumatized. So when people talk about being triggered, what I want you to recognize is that what's being triggered is the protective response, the part that says you're in danger again, right? And so it's just helpful to know that that is actually what's happening. The trauma self almost never comes to coaching, right? And the reason for that is that it's kind of there to block any of that ever being relived again. Yeah. In kind of 10 years of working with people with a lot of trauma, I would say that I've only seen the trauma self pop up in coaching half a dozen times. Maybe 10 times. And sometimes it's been with one client, right, who that felt safe to do that a couple of times. And it was because they wanted to really make sense of something. For another client, it was someone who was working with a therapist at the same time, and it was something that they were kind of experiencing a lot, and they were just processing what was going on, right? But I would say that that trauma self will hardly ever show up in coaching. It's not to say that it won't, but I think that it's only going to show itself when the client feels kind of safe enough to talk about what's happening. And that means that you're going to already know a bit probably a bit more about them than someone who's rocking up to their first client. You'll already have a relationship. So I want you to just recognize, I'll be resourced to help the client. It won't be about talking about or treating the trauma. It will be about supporting the client as they feel that sense of, you know, a protective response coming up. It's the survivor self that we're really, really interested in, right? This is the guy that we really want to get to know in our client. This is what we will see in coaching, because the survivor self is kind of the here and now impact of a past trauma, right? So I want you to think about the survivor self in terms of the protector, right? Self-doubt is our inner protector. I know we haven't really talked about our protectors in great detail yet, but just something to think about is that the protector is kind of on a spectrum, right? So at one end, you might think, oh, this feels a little bit edgy, but I can probably do it, right? I have a sense of, oh, I want to hold myself back, but I'm all right. And at the other end, you've got a survivor self who is in full strategy mode to protect the client from having to really look at anything, change anything. We're going to go into a lot of detail around what this looks like in this call, okay? But it's a great way to just think about that protector, is that at one end, you've got that kind of edgy feeling of, can I do this? And at the other, you've got a survivor self. Right? So it's a very pronounced protector. The survivor self is the part that maintains a pretty rigid defense against ever being re-traumatized. Right? So it's that smoke detector that's looking for risk all the time. And the survivor self tends to involve, it blocks access to any existing trauma. It's protecting against the risk of being re-traumatized. It acts like a very pronounced protector. So if you think about that self-doubt loop that we talked about a few modules ago, that alarm and discomfort and resistance is going to be super pronounced, right? It's going to be like, get out now, stop, stop, stop. Some things to know about the survivor self. It is all about strategies. How can I stop myself from accessing my body, accessing my emotions, and feeling vulnerable? Right? That's the key thing that it's all about. So it almost always involves cutting ourselves off from the body. Right? We don't want to feel too much. We don't want to really notice our body sensations. Right? Don't really want to pay any attention to anything that's going on below the neck. The really, really key thing to know about the survivor self is that it's not coachable. Right. So when you start to spot this within a client, and you will do this as you kind of start to play with this work and you know, get to know what your client, how your clients strategize against any kind of vulnerability at all, you're going to be able to spot that. You're going to help your client to spot this as well, right? You'll be able to see it in yourself. It's like a bell you can't unring. Yeah. But this is the part that isn't coachable. It's just not up for it. And we'll talk a little bit about why that is. And the other thing that's really important to note is that we have our own survivor strategies as coaches. As humans with coaching skills, right? You may or may not have trauma in your own biographies, but how, if you have had any kind of, you know, really difficult experiences, you will have found ways to keep yourself safe. You may have very pronounced protectors in specific contexts. Yeah. It's really helpful to know what those are for yourself. So I just want to spend a little bit of time talking about the really key survivor strategies that we're going to see. And this is really going to help to bring this model to life for you. Okay. So the first one is distraction, Right? Have you ever had a client who just won't shut up? Right? Who gives you a ton of context, long narratives about what's going on and why they can and can't do what they're doing. And let me tell you all about this particular relationship, which is the source of all of my, you know, difficulty. Yeah. If you've had clients who report avoiding resting, right? Sarah, you'll burn out people. Resting, being alone can be really tricky for a lot of people. All of it is about distracting themselves from that bodily sensation, emotional life, right? Don't want to be with myself because that feels scary. Yeah. I always think about this when I see folks on Instagram talk about, you know, listen to the whispers of your heart and what does your gut tell you? And I just think, you know, for a lot of people with trauma in their biography, actually accessing their gut feeling can be really hard. It's like, I don't really know what's going on down there. I don't really want to pay too much attention to that, right? Because I can't control that. I don't know what's going to come up. That can feel quite dangerous for some folks, right? So it's just all about like not making assumptions, this work. But yeah, distraction's a big one. Anything that takes our attention away from what we're feeling. Coaches who have used distractions will tend to do the same thing, right? We kind of gloss over difficult emotions, right? In sessions, we don't really want to talk too much about anything that's going on. We don't like silences and like playing with silence. Right? You might tend to feel like as soon as there's some vulnerable feelings that come up, like helplessness or anxiety, the sense that, oh, maybe I can't help you. We'll do things like, let's use a tool. I know a tool that can help you, right? So we kind of avoid that sense of, I'm not sure what to do. Yeah. It's just something to notice, right? Is there a survivor strategy that you're using that involves some distraction? Yeah. Second one's control. Biggie. Bringing as much as possible under your control, internally and externally. And it's all about calming the chaos, right? So you might find that you have clients who just talk about, you know, they may even joke about it, but they're controlling a lot of how they're seen by other people, from what they say, what they wear, what they eat, what they allow themselves to do and be and have, all of that. You may find that there are some clients that you feel a bit controlled by, where you sort of feel like they're really wanting to run this, you know, they want to be in charge here. You can just hear their stories that kind of demonstrate how control is pretty vital for them. And for us as coaches, you know, we can try to control sessions and steer clients away from things we find uncomfortable, right? Maybe we don't ask for support or help or supervision or recognize our own blind spots because it's like, whoa, that's a bit uncomfortable. That feels a bit vulnerable. Maybe I'm not very good. Got to control it, right? That's definitely one I've had in the past, probably now too. I'm trying to control your view of me by saying that it's in the past. Okay. Compensation is another one. And all I mean by compensation is that we're trying to compensate for emotional or embodied connection, right? So we're seeking some kind of high, some kind of sense of being alive. So this can look like kind of faux happiness, right? Seeking things that bring us joy, but we don't actually feel the joy. So things like eating and excessive eating, drinking, sexual promiscuity, gambling, scrolling, shopping, laughing at things that aren't funny. You ever had a client who just keeps laughing at things that aren't very funny? There's usually someone in every office that laughs at things that aren't funny or laughs at the end of sentences, right? And it's like a way of trying to kind of compensate for something. Usually there's a bit of shame and guilt around this because it's all about behaviours that we don't tend to talk about in our culture. So it can be something that you may or may not be aware of. Your clients may just allude to it. If this is something that you can recognise in yourself, it's something that I would definitely recommend you get some help with. And the fourth one, there's five, the fourth one is illusions. So illusions are just this idea that we can escape to fantasy, right? We believe in any kind of idealized, simple, perfect future or simple, perfect existence. Sometimes we can do this as a kind of when this happens, then I'll get to have whatever or feel or be whatever I'm desiring. Mostly it's about avoiding the difficulties that we experience in the here and now. So we can see this in clients who might gloss over reality, or they sort of have this idealized future or a sense of, they may talk about being really unique and special, right? Being kind of indispensable or heroic. Yeah, only I can do this. This is just me, just on me. Yeah. And clients can do this for themselves, and they can also idealize other people, right? So parents, their boss, colleagues, friends, folks on Instagram, celebrities. It's like, oh, if only I was like that person, then my life would be better. Yeah. And, I always think about, positive thinking. And for coaches, this is how it can show up, is when we're uncomfortable in a session, we might try and dismiss the client's experience and think about, let's think about the bright side. Let's look for the rainbow or the lesson, rather than just being with a client who is experiencing a difficult emotion. Yeah. So that's how it can show up for coaches. We don't want to be with the reality of what's going on. And the last one is denial, right? So, and this is kind of an interesting one. It's about refusing to accept that something is true, even though a part of us knows that it's true, right? I think you'll probably see this a lot in your work, Sarah. Clients who will refuse to kind of acknowledge that working a 60-hour week is a problem, right? Or, I've seen this a lot. Boarding school wasn't great, but I'm sure it did me good, right? My mother is in constant daily contact, but that's just her. It's fine, right? All these things that our clients will talk about, and it will maybe send up a little red flag for us. We were like, is that okay though? Right? And it's like, deny. I'm not going to make this a problem. Mostly because we probably don't really know what we'll need to do in order to manage this if we acknowledge that it's true. What will happen, though, is that if we challenge it as coaches, it will often move to denial or move to defense, right? So you start to say to a client, so working a 60-hour week isn't a problem. No, it's fine. Everybody does it. This generation, they don't know they've been born. Work-life balance, what's that? Right? It can even become part of the culture in a workplace. How late can we stay to prove that we're the hardest? Right? So it's just, we can't kind of coach that, right? It turns immediately into defense, right? And for coaches, we can use denial or resort to denial. In a couple of ways. One, I think when we sense that something's off with a client, but we're not prepared to raise it, so we kind of act like nothing's wrong, even though something in us is saying something isn't right. All right, so that spidey sense we sort of talked about. or there is obviously something wrong, right? But no one is talking about it. So just carry on like normal. And I think the other way that we can use denial is to kind of get a bit consumed with maybe the business side of coaching, right? So we start to measure our effectiveness as a coach by things that are, by measures that are nothing to do with coaching, right? So things like the number of followers you have or your income, right? It's like, is that actually anything to do with your effectiveness as a coach? Yeah. And it's, I think it, a lot of it is about not wanting to kind of look at, well, how am I showing up to my clients? Am I actually helping people? How do I know? Right. So that feels really freaking vulnerable for most of us. So of course we go, well, I know that I'm a good coach because I have this many followers, or I have, you know, I got a testimonial 3 years ago that said this. Right, we kind of cling to the things that leave us feeling some level of comfort, because then we can relax. Yeah. So the reason to share these things is to just know that when we start to recognize these behaviors that come up in ourselves and in our clients, right, our job is not to coach that issue. Our job is to coach the healthy self of the client from our own healthy self. Right. So I just want to pause here for just a second and just check in with folks. How many of you are kind of going, oh, I totally recognize myself or my clients? Maybe clients are coming to mind as I'm sharing those strategies. Yeah. Anyone want to share anything, ask any questions? Anything coming up for you?
I think some of it is actually a reflection and recognition that some of how I went through my coach training might have actually been triggering for someone who has experienced trauma, because a lot of the messaging that I gave is, you are the creator of your own reality, and that was what's the lesson that you experienced and how can we reframe that. There is some merit in that, but if you haven't kind of looked at the trauma behind it and assessed that, sometimes you're kind of adding to the trauma in a way, aren't you? It's kind of saying, well, that's not valid. What you're experiencing isn't valid. Let's just move forward.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what you're speaking to, Sarah, is the way that we're traumatized by our culture, right? We live in a culture that has systems of oppression that are set up to marginalize and dismiss the experience of some of our fellow travelers. And so, you know, there's this amazing meme that came out a few years ago that says, well, maybe you manifested it. Maybe it was white privilege, you know? Mm. And I always come back to that, right? Like we kind of have this idea in our culture that we're all individual, self-sufficient, able to create our own destiny. And actually, none of us do anything on our own. So we kind of have to be able to see that we're part of a collective, even if our culture hasn't set us up to do that. You know, none of us get where we're going alone. So why would we put our responsibility for coping with all of this stuff on us as individuals? You know.
Yeah. So I'm looking, because I'm just kind of processing as you're speaking, because I suppose coached, the coaching rhetoric is, you know, you are in control of your experience and you are empowered to be able to create change.
Yeah.
But also this has happened to you. So I don't know whether I've quite found the way of both of those messages together. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, both are true. Mm-hmm. Right. I believe we are. I mean, each of us individually, I mean, my goodness, what can we do? You know, amazing work. And absolutely, you know, I think that there is a huge amount of merit in us working with individuals and empowering individuals to feel, you know, I mean, my work's all about self-belief, right?
Yeah.
How do we get you from where you are now to feeling really like your fully expressed self, where your self-concept feels like you and you feel fully expressed? And I know that I've worked with many, many people in the corporate world over the years, and they walk out of a session full of that sense of self, and they walk into an organization where all of these survivor strategies are actually the company values. Right? We don't want you to feel too much. We don't want you to be too emotional. We want you to believe in the positive vision of our company as the be all and end all. We want you to find an extreme amount of meaning and joy in your job, so much so that you give us extra time and energy and effort and labor for free, right? So all of these survivor strategies are things that are deeply valued by our culture. And so we kind of have to acknowledge that there are limits to coaching to individuals. Yeah. And that's where it gets like complex, right? Then I don't know about you guys, my brain starts to go, oh my God, well, what am I even doing? Right? So I think what can be helpful is to stay with it's both and, right? It's both. Yes, we work with individuals. That can be hugely important. How else are we going to change the world other than one person at a time? And we can't deny that each of us individually and collectively are subject to traumatizing experiences, traumatizing cultural values. And just the denial of our existence as rounded humans, you know, and if you fall into any group that happens to be marginalized, then that's going to be an added layer of traumatization for you. So it's both and, you know. And they both get to be true. Beautiful share. Thanks, Sarah. Barrett, you've got your hand up. Can you unmute, please?
I think it's a bit loud today. I'm just trying to make sure.
Oh, I can hardly hear you, Barrett. Sorry.
I put a question on the chat. Could you just read the question?
Oh, okay, great. Thank you so much. Yeah, you're in a slightly noisier place. I understand how a tool might be used as a life raft in a coaching session, but this can be quite a pickle. I've made the experience with a couple of clients that they can't wait to get strategies and tools. Yeah, because they are tangible and feel proper thrown at them. Yes, I completely agree. We're going to talk a little bit about entanglement in a moment. So what you're talking about is, you know, when our clients want to move into action, like just tell me the freaking answer, right? Give me the tool. I want to understand what's going on. I don't want to sit in this discomfort. Right. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that a healthy response is to sit in that discomfort. It's more just that when a client is in a kind of survivor strategy, when that shows up in coaching, we need to acknowledge what's happening so that they can come back to themselves, and then we can introduce the tool or ask the question or take it somewhere else. Right. And we're going to be learning how to do that and what that looks like as we move through this program. Right. What I want you to do today is to just go, oh, that's so interesting to notice that heaps of my clients use distraction to avoid anything uncomfortable. I wonder what that's about. Right. That's so interesting that I use illusions whenever I feel uncomfortable. I'm like, let me daydream my way out of this. Right? Like it's more about awareness at this stage. Like let's get aware, because the thing that will happen is once you are kind of back in yourself, when you're sort of slightly more regulated, your nervous system's a bit more regulated, when you're breathing normally, when you're not feeling like, oh, I'm at risk here, I need to get out of this, then answers will often bubble up. Right, what do I want to do about this? So I really encourage you over the next like while to start to pay attention to survivor strategies that you might see in your colleagues, in your friends. You don't have to coach anybody, but in your clients, in yourself, right? Just start to get an awareness of that. Start to notice it. It might be you can do that in the moment, and it might be that it comes to you the next day. It might be in 4 months' time, you're like, oh, holy shit, that's my pattern. I've totally nailed it. I can see it now. And then you can start to look at, all right, so that's how I've been responding. Does that feel good to me? Is there something I want to change, and what might that look like? But there's no rush, right? There's no, nothing's gone wrong. All we're doing is protecting ourselves. Right. And these survivor strategies may or may not come from traumatic experiences. What Julia Vaughan Smith and Franz Rupert suggest is that it's more than likely that they do. But what I'm also suggesting is it kind of doesn't matter what causes it, because it's the here and now response, right? That's actually a protective mechanism that our clients are using. Sometimes for very good reasons. So we don't want to go probing around and try and say, well, I'm going to take away the one thing that helps you feel safe, right? What I'm going to do is notice it, maybe point it out to you a few times, see how that feels for you. See if you want to make some changes, because we go at the pace of the client. Yeah. Does that help you both, Sarah, Britt? These are great questions. Thank you. And yeah, we go at the pace of the client. If the client is like, you know, tell me the answer, then we can go, okay, so what feels really important right now? What is the thing that you want to talk about in this session? And then we see where we get to. Yeah. All right. Great stuff. So I wanted to talk a bit about entanglement, because this is really the kind of money shot, if you like, of trauma-informed coaching. I think this is the most helpful and important thing that we can do, is to notice when we get entangled, right? And so what happens during entanglement is that the client goes into their survivor self, right? They start their strategy, and that activates our strategy, our survivor self, right? So you can imagine when a client says something like, no, that's not a problem for me. I don't really know what you mean by burnout. I just power through it, right? And your kind of desire to support them, help them, control is kind of like, well, can't you bloody see this, right? You can kind of get ever activated by this. And then you end up in a kind of stalemate. No one's really coaching at that point. No one's in the coaching session. You're all back in your kind of protector corners. Yeah. So when we get entangled, it's because our survivor strategies get activated by our clients' survivor strategies. It happens all the freaking time. I want to talk about the four ways that this shows up for coaches. See if you recognize yourself. Rescuing. This is the one most of us do lots of the time, right? And it's when we're over-giving to accommodate the client's needs. When we take on the responsibility of solving things for the client. When we feel the urge to like take away any hurt or soothe or rescue the client. Right. So this is how we respond. Our survivor strategy the client survivor strategy happens, right? And then we go in and try and rescue. We get activated, we want to rescue. Anyone got that one? I totally do that one. Yeah. Resentment. Resentment is when you believe you're doing all the hard work. Right? So it might be that your client feels a little bit like they don't kind of bring much to the session. They're waiting for you to tell them what to do. they're not really, maybe you're a coach who likes to give homework or exercises and they don't really do them. They seem to tell you the same story every session, just versions of it change or the characters change, but it's the same kind of outcome. And if you're experiencing any kind of irritation or exasperation, frustration, anger towards the client, you're entangled. You're resenting the client. Yeah. We get seduced by their survivor strategy and go, oh shit, I've got a job to do now. No. Okay, the third one is avoidance, right? And this is where we get polite rather than say what we think would help support the client because something feels risky about that. We might collude or agree with our client to avoid looking at something. Collusion's a biggie. You know, when you have a client who says, well, I know I said I wanted to do this, but I couldn't do my homework because, you know, I'm a parent. End of story. And you go, I'm a parent too. It's hell. I don't know how anyone does anything. You know, of course you didn't do your homework. But what happens to the reason that the client came to coaching in the first place when you're both colluding with them? And not looking at how can you do what you want within your current circumstances, within your, you know, does it need to take longer? Do you need to ask for support? What's the way to do this that feels good for you? Right? Avoidance can also look like a lack of empathy, right? So we feel a bit unmoved or distant or bored by the client. We're sort of almost like avoiding their humanity. Yeah. And the last one, and then I'll come to questions. I see a couple of hands raised. The last one is self-doubt, right? Well, we start questioning or second guessing our skills and value as a coach, right? Particularly if you get someone who is really in denial about stuff or is in that place of kind of, constantly distracted, just won't kind of go there. Sometimes that can lead to us going, oh, actually, maybe this is about me. Right? And we will hold ourselves back because we worry about what might happen. We can get into convincing mode quite easily. Right? So entanglement is inevitable. It never feels great, right? But it's something to really, really pay attention to because it can absolutely be minimized, it can be repaired, and it's just about reflecting. It's about noticing, being aware of this. Okay, we've got a couple of hands raised. Lorraine, unmute.
Hi. I don't know how to articulate this very well, if I've got it quite right, but I was just wondering about when you're talking about giving homework.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wonder if I give homework to clients, and it's almost a way because I'm trying to avoid dealing with it on the call, or I'm just not confident of how I feel about things maybe as well.
Yeah.
And it's, so it's just weird. How does that fit into things?
Well, do you think that's true?
That
you do that sometimes?
I think it's sometimes I give it to them because I think I'm not confident in using the tool actually. Maybe that's
right.
Right.
Yeah.
So is that me trying to disentangle, or
yeah? Well, it may be a way of avoiding having to try it out and screw it up from time to time. Maybe you get it wrong. What would that mean about you?
Yeah.
It's worth just playing with. Like, oh, I'm noticing I do this. I wonder why I do this.
Yeah.
What might that be protecting me from? And look, it could be that actually that is what you're doing, right? That it's a way of kind of avoiding having to awkwardly move through a tool that you don't feel 100% confident with. So you have some choices, right? What do you want to do? Do you want to practice the tool on some people? Do you want to try it out anyway? You know, how do you like to get good at things? Mostly it's going to mean doing it, right? So how can you do that in a safe way? And then you, and then you're making a conscious choice. It'll be interesting then to see, oh, am I, do I still do that, right? Do I still give it as homework? Or does it feel easier?
Yeah. Okay.
It's all about like just building your own awareness. But I mean, it strikes me as a really smart way of not, you know, not having to be with that discomfort, right? Like just give it as homework. Sweet. Then you don't have to feel that discomfort. Yeah. Really cool.
Okay. Thank you. So,
you're welcome. You're welcome. And Barrett, you've got your hands raised as well, love. Oh, she's gone. Popped off. Okay. Maybe we'll come back to that. She comes back in. Okay. Any other questions around those? Oh, Barrett, did you have a question, love? You didn't have a question? Okay. It might have been a hand raised from before. Anyone else got anything? Yeah, Sarah, hi.
So what you're saying there about entanglement has made me realize I do jump into rescuing quite a lot.
Yeah.
Which is my own survivor strategy. It's like over, I'll give you so much more.
Yeah.
Which means that I get tired coaching. Like it does really drain my energy, even though I love it, it can be really draining. So I suppose it's a bit of awareness there. That's probably one of the reasons. So it's reflecting on that and where can I rein that back is probably going to help with that. Do you have any other tools that you use that help you to protect your energy a bit more within the coaching session so that it doesn't drain you?
I think this is the thing, right? Like there's no simple easy thing that I would say do this, it will be amazing and you'll never have to feel discomfort again. Mm-hmm. Right? It's much more about being present to your own experience while you're in the session, right? So that's really what supervision is all about. It's about what was your experience while working with this client.
Yeah.
Right? So just paying attention, where are there particular clients that I tend to dive in and rescue with, right? It might be individuals or it might be particular kind of challenges that they bring to coaching that sparks up that rescuer in you, right? And just getting curious about where that feels, you know, where that feels a little sticky for you. What might that be about? What might be at risk if you stopped rescuing clients?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And then you can start to say, well, what choices do I have? What do I want to do instead? Right. And I'd also offer just to everyone, this happens to all of us all the time. There's never going to be a time in your coaching career where you don't get entangled with clients. It's just because it's human, right? And it depends on how tired you are and what the client says, and you're going to keep working with new clients and they're going to activate your survivor strategies in different ways. It's the gift that keeps giving. Right. So I just really want you to feel kind of relaxed that, oh, there's no like once and done fix here. It's more about, can I just maintain a level of awareness around my own experience and start to practice some choices? And we'll keep talking about this as we go. Okay.
Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. Sharon.
Hi. This action plan business, this homework, I just recognize that so much. In fact, I recognize all of these. I do all of these.
Me too. And
it's just so annoying. And when people like do that, and they, so I encourage them to create their own action plan at the end, you know, even though we've agreed what they do together, but they physically have to email it to me or whatever. And some of them don't even do that. They don't email it. And then the ones that do email it to me, then a lot of them, you know, they just haven't done it. And
yeah.
I am just so rubbish at going, well, why haven't you done it then? That's the reason why you're here, isn't it? I just go, oh, that's okay, it's all right, you know, we're kind of, yeah, I know you're busy and kind of like, and you know, and because I've written it down, you know, it, and that's because I just want to be liked. You know, I don't want them to see me as a bad person. I'm not going to her again because I got told off, you know, kind of.
Right, yes, yeah. Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's crap, isn't it, really?
That's what it's all about. Well, it sounds like it's been working for you, right? Because do your clients like you, that you don't hold them accountable?
Oh, yeah. In fact, yes. But I've done this in a whole mastermind group. We started off in the mastermind. They have doing like 90-day goals and
because
none of them ever done it. And they were kind of like, oh, it doesn't really work for me. And you know, I'm like, oh, well, okay, if it doesn't work for you, let's not do it anymore. You know, and then I'm like, not really. Yeah. They all love it, you know. But
Well, and this is, I think you're inviting us beautifully into our exercise for today, which I'm just conscious of time. This module, by the way, the call this morning went for nearly 2 hours because everyone had questions and I just wanted to be available to everyone. We're not going to do that tonight unless you want to. I have a dinner at the beach to get to anyway.
Of course.
But I want us to get to this exercise because I think, Sharon, this is exactly what you've really nailed it here, right? What I want you to do is to think about your difficult clients, right? Clients in the past, and Sharon, you've already done this, right? but clients that you're either currently working with or you've worked with in the past where you kind of did those, you know, the rescuing, the avoidance, the self-doubt came up, or you were just, you know, in that place of entanglement, maybe resenting them a little bit. I want you to think about three things, and then we're going to just do this in breakouts for just for 10 minutes. What assumptions were you making about the client? And then what did you make this mean about you? All right, what did you make it mean about you that you had this response? And what else could be true? Right? So what assumptions were you making about clients? What did you make it all mean about you as a coach, and what else could be true? Right, so we're just going to get into pairs. I think we're going to have 1-3. Just for sort of 10, 15 minutes, just to chat this through, right? Just off the cuff. Don't overthink it. Don't worry about having the right answer. It's just about, oh, I'm recognizing this, right? I made these assumptions about the client, right? Everyone okay with that? And then we'll come back and wrap up. Oh, it looks like folks are coming back in. Ace. Sorry, I wasn't sure if we'd lost you. anyone want to share anything that came up for you in that conversation? What you noticed? Please feel free to share before we wrap up. Anyone have any questions or anything that's coming up for you? Yeah, Sarah.
So one of the challenges I have with clients is often difficult clients is that they talk and talk and talk and it's really hard to get them back on point. We were just talking about this then, and I can realise now how that can relate to trauma and not wanting to actually experience the emotions. It's easier to just stay here and chat, 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 chat. And I haven't addressed that very well, I don't think, yet. I've just let them kind of verbally spew for ages. Right. It means my sessions often run over as well, which is another reason I get depleted because I'm doubling up on time. So it has
it's
to
all making sense, right?
It's all making
sense. Yeah.
It's all making sense. Interestingly, one of the clients I have also said that she'd received that feedback from her director. So digging into this is important.
Yeah.
So on the call, we talked about how we can potentially kind of interrupt it with, I notice that when I ask you, you do this, or why do you think that might be? Or do you experience this in other situations, for example, might be a way of kind of interrupting the verbal stream. Is there any other ways that you might recommend that I can draw things back more effectively without getting rude?
Well, I don't know if this is true for your clients, but what I've noticed is that they come to the session a bit kind of wired, So what I would do as a way of, I guess, just allowing that sort of regulation to happen right from the off is to just say, hey, before we get started today, I just really want us to both be kind of here. So I'm just going to invite you to kind of be with me for a moment. We're just going to take some deep breaths together. Because I, you know, and maybe you can even say, you know, I just notice I feel a little bit kind of edgy today, or something that feels true for you. And it's just a way of like, you know, how did that, you know, how did that land for you, kind of thing. It's like, oh, you know, and then you've got also a way to then open each session with those clients. And during the session, you can say, oh yeah, I noticed there's a lot of energy there. Would you like to try just breathing for a second? This is an amazing way just to kind of immediately come back to yourself, right? And then you're weaving in some of your body magic, right? Mm-hmm. Your witchcraft, as they'll call it in the corporate world.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just a way of like reminding your client that they have a body and that their breath is so important, right? Like go into your belly breath kind of thing. And it's a safe way of being in your body. All right. It could just open the door. I don't know if that lands for you, Sarah, but yeah.
Massively. Yes. Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you. I hadn't thought about that, but that's really good. Thank you. Yeah.
Brilliant. And yeah, just notice, what else do you feel inspired to try with people, right? Because when you are regulated and not kind of spiraling with their story, you'll know what to do. Amazing. Nice work. Yeah, Lorraine.
Yep, hi. Yeah, I was in a room with Norvi, and I think just what came to mind, which I think is kind of related to what you were saying, was the whole thing around about contracting.
Yeah.
So I did my initial training with Barefoot, and you know, all the time they would talk about contracting. And so I kind of understood it, but this has made it feel much more relevant to think, oh, actually, that's how you can really make it part of the experience, rather than it just being a kind of tick box almost that you kind of go through.
Yeah.
It gives you something to defer back to all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's so, I love that you've raised this, Lorraine, because sometimes I feel like, and this is not always true, and I'm a complete fan of boundaries. Like I think safe containers are really where the magic happens. But I can also see that a lot of coach training might use contracting, and it's such an official word, right? It's almost like a way of controlling, right? And it can be a little, I don't know, for me it always, that word always feels a little bit dehumanizing, you know. So I mean, what we're trying to do with the contracting is like, you know, set a little intention for the session, you know. So even, you know, saying to your client, we can call this what you want, what feels good to you, you know, like how would we like to start our sessions. You know, I like us to kind of talk about what we're going to talk about, and then we just see where we go. Mm-hmm. Right. You and it may be that you want to do this for yourself in a bit more of a way that allows you to prepare more. So sometimes you might say, well, what's our intention for this upcoming session, and you send that out as a reminder 24 hours beforehand, right? So you get to manage this. You get to kind of, you know, be the holder of the container. But yeah, setting that contract can be super safe for someone who's a bit like, oh, I need to kind of know what's going on. So actually giving them some time to think about, what do I want to talk about this time, can be really helpful.
Yeah. I used to be a lawyer 100 years ago, so I hate the contracting. It took me to get my head around that it wasn't a, you know.
Yeah.
I think
it's not a written agreement that you can be held accountable to. Yeah.
What you described to Sarah, to me, that was that's a form of contracting.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm a huge fan of changing words to reflect what feels good to you. Yeah, really cool. Anyone else want to share anything that came up from your shares? Oh, good. Okay. So So what I just want to come back to, just one last slide that I just wanted to share, is that one of the key ways that we can kind of self-manage, disentangle, like once we kind of go, oh, hang on, I'm entangled. There's a couple of things that I just wanted to share with you. One is a technique that my supervisor taught me ages ago, which I now use. And it's Sarah, you might really like this because it's a kind of somatic practice. But what I do is I just hold my thumb with one hand and I do this under the table so no one can see, right? You can't see me doing that. But that for me is a way of me saying, hey, come back to my healthy self. I've got me, right? I can hold me. So it's like a kind of somatic metaphor, I guess, right? But what I have found is that when I do that now, it's like a little, it's almost like an automatic response, like something in my body will sometimes realize that I'm entangled before I consciously am aware of it, right? It's kind of mad. I love that witchcraft. But yeah, and it's just a way of me saying, I'll come back to your healthy self. I've got me, I've got this container. And I want to share with you what I mean by that. So I'm just going to share my screen. And this is absolutely in the workbook. This is something we're going to talk about a million times. So please don't feel like I've got to memorize all of this, right? But what I mean by your healthy self as a coach, right? This is the part of you that has that very clear, deep presence, right? You can just be with your clients in a regulated way, right? Your body's calm. Your mind is pretty clear. You're in a place where you feel okay. You're pretty lovingly detached from any outcome, right? So maybe the clients will do their 90-day plan and maybe they won't, right? Will they get their money's worth? Who knows? It's a mystery, right? But we are always going to be up for working with the clients who bring it, right? Your healthy self has access to your intuition and your intellect. Your healthy self always knows what to do, always knows just what the next step is. So you can just trust that, lean into that. As soon as you kind of can calm yourself and be, it's okay, I've got this. What are my choices? What would I like to do now? Right? And you've got access to all of these amazing resources that are just innate magical parts of your personality, right? Humor, resilience, courage, your emotional range. And I know these are facts about you because you're a coach, right? We have these resources available to us. We are the natural helpers of the universe, right? So we have these resources available to us. That's what allows us to do this work. And you're also embodied, right? You can access your own emotional range. You can kind of sense into your body sensations and sort of get an idea of what's going on for you, what's going on for your client, what you want to do next, right? So I just really want to like encourage you to kind of own this, right? Like own the fact that you have a really healthy self. Notice when you're in this state. Notice when you get glimpses of these resources coming up for you in conversations with your pals, with your colleagues, with your clients, with your partner, you know, like this is positive reinforcement for you, right? When we're in a learning state, we're always looking at what have I got to learn and how far away am I from mastery? You know, what am I doing wrong? I haven't got this right yet. I want you to really start noticing what's working, what's already here, what you can already believe about yourself, right? Because that is going to really help you when entanglement absolutely happens. It's like, oh no, come on, I can come back to this. I can come back to my healthy self, right? And we will absolutely explore, you know, practical things to do that. And there's some ideas in the workbook for you to do that. But just notice, like, what can happen when we get a bit entangled is that we sort of forget that we do have the answer, right? We sort of go into a bit of a stress response and we lose our ability to kind of go, oh, hang on a second, I probably do know what my choices are. I probably do know what I can do here. It might not feel like something I want to do quite yet, or I'm not really sure how I'm going to go about it, but I do have an awareness of probably what would be best, what would be the healthiest response. And there's no rush, right? You haven't done it yet, so there's no rush. It doesn't have to be done straight away. Yeah. So it's all about bringing some compassion back to yourself, as you as a human with some coaching skills. You as a human with maybe your own experiences of trauma. You as a human who's just, you know, making sense of all of that, processing it, and trying to help people as you do that. You know, these are complex things. So, you know, there is no rush and there's no right way. And I have absolutely no expectations about how long this takes or what this looks like for you. Right? So really go gently. And you may have a survivor strategy that says, no, I've got to do this fast and hard, right? And it's like, oh, look at me trying to win, right? Trying to win at being trauma-informed. And that's, you know, that's just a lovely quality to have, that you want to do this well, right? And there's no rush. Yeah. So, just this final slide, I promise this is the last one. When you're in your healthy self, coaching is always possible, right? Because no matter where the client is, if they're in their healthy self, their survivor self, or occasionally, really, their trauma self, when you're in your healthy self, you can work with them. You can come back to their healthy self and coach that part of them, right? So that's like the key resource that you have available to you. Okay, we've gone way past time. I'm really sorry that we've done that. We kind of always do that with this module. But I just really want you to kind of play, sit with this, ask questions in the forum, allow this to bubble up during your integration week. Relax, chill out, let it wash over you. If you have questions, please ask them. And we'll be in touch over the break with your practice pod information. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with module 4, which is our first practice module. Can't wait to share that with you. Okay, everybody, take care of your lovely selves, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Thanks so much. Bye, everyone. Bye-bye.